Hello, Clara.
Hello.
Thank
how
you
are
for
you?
Fine, fine. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to make this interview for Immunopedia. The first question is, what are the most recent and remarkable findings about bone marrow transplantation in your working group?
Well, the most recent things is that now we are applying new technology to the registry, as it's going on in all registries, not in all, but in many registries worldwide. We want to upfront, when we have a donor that is registered in any of our donor centers around the country, to try to define the HLA genes in very high resolution with high throughput techniques. So we are using next generation sequencing, and we are defining 11 loci. That means that we define world classical class 1 loci, class 2 loci, but we also define DRB3, 4, and 5, DQA, DQB, DPA, DPB. And that way, you have a much better definition up front when you have a donor. When somebody in the world, a transplant center, or any registry worldwide asks to do a search, we do it automatically. All of the registries worldwide, we belong to Bone Marrow Donor Worldwide. So we send our results of our donors every month to the database, the worldwide database. So if somebody in Japan wants to look for a donor for one of their patients, he automatically enters the database, the worldwide database, and he sees, oh, here I have a donor in Mexico. The only thing he sees there are the 11 genes and the word Mexico. So he knows that it's in our registry, and immediately he sends the search form to our registry, and he says, I would like to have one of your donors. I saw one of your donors, type donor, fully type, and I want to see if you can send me a sample. So immediately you check the database, you send him the probable donors, which are very high resolution defined, and then immediately he can ask for a sample. So this shortens the request very much, and you can get a sample of the donor much faster. That means that now you can do a non-related transplant in 1 month. You can achieve it. Okay. So that's fantastic.
It's a great job.
Yeah.
Thank you. And you are the chair of the foundation Comparte Vida?
I am. Well, I founded the Fundación Comparte Vida because of the need of having donors outside the family, because as I said yesterday, only 25% is possible to get a completely matched donor. So that's why we decided to create the foundation to support the registry. And why? Because you have a lot of different genes that you will not find in other populations. And there are mixtures and a lot of Hispanics all around the world. So you help patients not very easily. But now, depending on the race, on the ethnicity, you have much more opportunities of giving life to someone. For instance, in Europe, if you look for donors in the German registry or in the Finnish registry or in the Dutch registry, for those kind of populations, 90% of Caucasians have a donor, a possible donor. If you look for blacks, they have like 30% possibilities of finding a donor outside the family. That means that you need more blacks registered worldwide. But since you don't have registries in Africa, you have only one registry in South Africa, and you don't have many blacks registered and the culture, and they are not aware of what this program means, they don't register easily.
Yeah.
For instance, if you see the USA in the States, you will see that in their database they have $14 million.
Wow.
$14 million, and we have almost 19,000. That's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we need? Awareness. We need to make aware people that any of us can have the disease close by.
How will it evolve? How will Comparte Vive evolve in the next years?
Well,
are you optimistic?
Yes, I'm optimistic. We are doing publicity every time. Every people are knowing more about the foundation, knowing more about this, and understanding that it's like donating blood, that you won't have any problem. That's one of the issues with people. They are afraid if something will happen to them. But no, because we have the obligation of following up all our donors.
Mm-hmm.
So every donor worldwide that donates either bone marrow or PBSC, peripheral blood stem cells, must be followed by their own registry. So then you follow up these donors for 10 years after donation. So you really know that nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
And you report the data. And bone marrow donors worldwide, you can see it in the world page, has a report yearly where it says how many donors you have each year, what problems you have had with donations, and there you can see clearly that there are no problems after donation with anybody. So people are being more and more confident nowadays. And that's the best procedure after a matched donor within the family.
Great. Thank you very much. Changing the topic,
yes.
What is your opinion on the publish or perish culture, the pressure to rapidly publish research work in order to process in science? And what alternatives do you see also?
Well, look, I understand that the world is evolving rapidly and technology is evolving rapidly, and we are depending on things like that. And the pressure is terrible, and I feel that that's not convenient.
Okay.
Because when you have so much pressure, you can start doing things that are not right.
Okay.
And you may publish results that are not the best results.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's not very convenient to do things like that. And you must have also the awareness and the ethics to know what you have to do or not. I think that it's better to publish a little less, but do work of high quality.
And do you see an alternative? Is it going to change or no? Are we still...
I don't know, but as you must be aware of also, there is a journal of non-credible results. And there you can see that many people is publishing things that are rubbish, really, because they need those things to survive. So I think this will come to a point that it won't be acceptable. And that will be controversial, but I think that's something that should not happen and probably will evolve in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
The reviewers are being more strict. They are now asking for payment to publish. So it's not easy to publish in very good quality journals. You have to pay a lot of money so your paper can be accepted. That will also make that you think very well what you are publishing. So probably this will go back a little bit, and I hope that it will, because otherwise science will go to hell.
Yes, well, we hope so.
I'm optimistic, and I hope that we should understand that we cannot do things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know really what will happen, because also in many countries in the world, you depend on that. If you don't publish, they don't pay you. If you don't publish, you don't get grants. If you don't get grants, you cannot survive. But that must, you must learn from those things that if you don't publish high quality results, you will not survive anyway. So I hope
it will change.
Change.
Okay, great, thank you.
I hope. Okay.
And in your opinion, what is the future of scientific research in Latin America, and what would be the impact of a stronger collaboration between countries?
Well, I think that's very important. Latin America is probably just starting, because what we have had in Latin America is a lot of greediness. People don't want to work with their colleagues. People are not specialized. People want to be the one that does everything. That's not possible nowadays. Nowadays, you have hyper-specialization, and you cannot have one person doing everything. So I think that Latin Americans are understanding that you must start working with your colleagues. You may be the monocyte man and the other one the antibody man and the other one the expert in cytokines, and you should understand that if you do not work with colleagues that are expert in another field, you will not achieve anything. So this is a moment, and I think Latin Americans are starting to understand that you cannot do everything, and you must work with your own colleagues. Latin Americans were like used to work better with American people or European people than with Latin Americans because of envy, because of greediness. Now they are understanding that if you have another expert in front of you in the same country, why don't you work with him and try to take out papers faster and with good quality. So I think Latin Americans are understanding that and are starting to work together. And that will help to have better quality papers, faster publications, and in better journals. I remember that the first congresses of immunology in Latin America, it was a problem. Nobody wanted to speak English. They said, no. We are Argentinians or we are Brazilians. We must speak in our language. That's absurd. You know that the scientific language worldwide is English. So if you are inviting faculty members from all around the world, you don't want them to understand what you are doing. You don't want to work with them. You don't want to establish networks with them. The answer is yes, you want to do it. Then you have to speak English. So that changed. You can see today that everybody is speaking English, and that the young people, if they themselves understand that if they do not speak English, they cannot be in science. So, and now this chauvinism that no, I have to speak in the language of my country, that's completely absurd. So the same way this changed, many things are changing in the way you are working with your colleagues, with publications, with everything. So I think it's improving a lot.
Collaboration.
Yeah, collaboration is essential, and understanding that you cannot be the person that does everything. That's impossible. You will do it wrong.
Yeah. And finally, as a woman, did you find difficulties in your scientific development? And do you think that the gender gap is closing, or is there still a long way to go?
Well, I think there is still a long way to go, but the gap is closing. I think things are evolving. When I started to work, I remember yesterday I mentioned it. One of my mentors, Dr. Salazar Mayen, once when I was with him and we were reviewing a journal in Nature, he suddenly said to me, you will have a lot of problems in your life. That was 40 years ago. And I said, suddenly why? And he said, I'll tell you why. That was 40 years ago. And he said, well, I must tell you, you are a woman. You are very clever. You know how to do things. You work a lot. And you have many advantages and good things. So that's why you will have problems with men and with women. And that is correct. I had them. And you felt those times that men were looking for other things, not precisely to help you. They found or they wanted that women should be their instruments of many things. And you have to be in front of those things and attack them and do whatever you can to demonstrate you are very valuable and you can do things. And we have done it. And I think women have gained, really, their place in science and in many other things in the world. But yes, you had a lot of problems, but still they are not so apparent, but they are there.
Yeah.
So you have to continue with the fight. And I'm sure it's closing the gap, and we are in a better position now, but we have to continue fighting for that.
Yeah. That are good news. Congratulations for receiving the Women in Immunology Award.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for giving this interview for Immunopedia.
Thank you very much. And really, I'm very happy because of the program that it was not made by one person.
Uh-huh.
We have a fantastic group at the patronage, at the committees, the volunteers, and they are very committed. So it's not a work of one person.
Yes, yes.
It's a team. Thank you very much for everything.